All right, every Thursday we hook up with Sean Estes. It's great to talk ball with Sean. He's having a good run with Greg Papa as the Giants TV pre and post take us through an opening week where the Giants landed a little blow, 2 out of 3 in San Diego. It involved the 10th inning rule, which we'll get into a little bit. But first, let's just shine a bright light on that big series win and say good morning to Sean Estes on the UMA guest line. What's up, Sean? Enjoy the weekly hit. Sean, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, guys. Yeah, that was a big win last night. Yeah.
Let's start with that because it's 162. We always hear like, hey, man, 162, 162. You just got to go on to the next one, got to go on to the next one. But, you know, and in football, you get big wins, you know what I mean, that can last for a week. But take us, Sean, inside the clubhouse. Like, can you make a case that that really matters, that the Giants went down there and took 2 out of 3 from the big, fancy-schmancy Padres who were supposed to be so great? Like, is that a bigger deal than just an average series?
Oh, absolutely it is. You know, other than the obvious of, you know, you finish the road trip, you know, 2-4 instead of 3-3. You have a game you should have won opening day, you know, which leaves a bad taste in your mouth. You lose 2 out of 3 in Seattle. Then you go into San Diego, a team that just got off of winning 3 out of 4 against the Diamondbacks and looking really impressive, looking like the juggernaut that everybody expected them to be. And then you go in there and you take 2 out of 3. And really, you take the rubber game yesterday with their, you know, you can probably consider Darvish and Snell both aces of that club. And you outpitched Blake Snell yesterday. You end up getting enough to win the game, and you go home, you have a happy flight, and you get to take it into opening day against the Rockies and a team you should beat. So absolutely. And a team too that they've struggled with in the past, the Padres. They've actually played the Dodgers better than they have the Padres over the last few years. And so I think it does wonders for just the team's confidence. If we remember back to last September, you know, they had to win 1 out of the last 2 games against the Padres. Padres already in the playoffs, didn't have much to play for other than maybe some momentum going into the playoffs. And the Padres took them down, eliminated them from the playoffs. So, you know, I think it's just a feel-good win yesterday for the whole club. And I think more than anything, it just goes to show you that Kevin Gausman is definitely the bona fide ace of this Giants rotation. And he's a guy that you can throw out there against anybody's best pitcher, and he gives you a chance to win. So, yeah, there's a lot of positives to take out of that series.
I kind of felt that way. I really did. Like, you know, it was kind of the Padres are like, damn, the Giants just came down here and messed with us. So a little seed in their head a little bit. So, you know, hey, we were, you know, Kevin Gausman, let's start here. And I'll actually go big picture with you, Sean. We were saying, you know, Farhan, people have their opinions on Farhan. Most people think he's a pretty smart dude. Other people are like, I don't like that style of baseball. But we're talking about fines, like where he goes and fines a guy. And we put these four names up here. Mike Yastrzemski, Donovan Solano, Alex Dickerson, and Kevin Gausman. Those to us would be like the four jewel fines from him. And we were like, is Gausman maybe the jewel of them all? I mean, did you, in studying this guy's career, was there evidence that this was in him? How did Farhan and Scott Harris and the analytics department know that this was in him? And just your take on that.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if I'd have it'd be tough to top Yastrzemski in what they found with him, based on the fact the guy hadn't had a big league at bat. And then, you know, a year and a half later, he's top 10 in the MVP. Yeah. So, yeah, Yastrzemski, and he's getting off to a slow start. But let's not forget the guy was pretty good the last couple of years. But Gausman, yeah, he could turn into – the thing about Gausman is he was – you know, he's been expected to be really good, you know, from the time he was drafted. He was a first-round draft pick.
Yeah,
I believe he was one of the top 2 picks in the country. And so, like, coming out of college, this kid was, you know, expected to be an ace of a rotation one day. The tools have always been there. That's not been a question at all. I think what happened was is that, you know, you get over the American League, you get with an organization, and they put something in your head that, you know, you should be this type of pitcher. And they wanted him to be, you know, obviously high-velocity fastball, good slider. They wanted him to be a fastball slider guy. And Farhan got him over here. The pitching staff had him believe that, no, you're not a fastball slider guy. You're a fastball split guy. There's not many guys in the big leagues that have the split he has, if anybody. And so they instilled the confidence in him that he could throw his split as his best secondary pitch, and he can have success with that. And so he took that mentality, and that's kind of what he always thought he was anyway. But when, like I said, when you have an organization telling you and your pitching coaches are telling you that you know, you got a great slider too, let's fine tune that thing and let's make you a fastball slider guy, and that's not you, then sometimes you end up spinning your wheels for a while. You know, it's not you. And he said the Giants have allowed him to become him. This is him. And so he goes out there and, you know, we've seen what we've seen the last year and a half or the last half year where he went out with that two-pitch combo. Yes, he does still have the slider. It's still above average, I believe. But the fastball split combination is as good as I've seen. And now he's just pitching with a ton of confidence. And, you know, he had to get some results with those two pitches, obviously, to make him believe that that's the type of guy he is. But, you know, when he started to get results last year, and then he really finished strong last year. I mean, I look back to his two starts this year and his last five starts last year. That's when he's really been impressive. He's given up two runs or less in all of those starts. So that just goes to show you that he's gaining confidence as he goes. And when he goes out there, like, yes, you could tell when he went out there. I mean, that's a good lineup he's faced in San Diego. And he just attacked those guys from pitch one. And so I think he just really trusts his stuff right now. He believes he's the guy. He wants to be the guy to go out there and end losing streaks to save a bullpen. And we saw that in his purest form yesterday.
That's a great breakdown, and it's huge. We're talking to Sean Estes, of course, on the UMA guest line. And for people who don't know, yeah, you're right. Out of LSU, the Orioles took him fourth overall in the 2012 MLB draft. I mean, that's big-time stuff. That guy was considered to be huge. And then what's interesting, though, is that it takes that long for him to find the right organization and the right staff. So I'm wondering about the mental side, Sean, the part that we can't quantify. Like, I wonder, at one point, does he – how does he stay confident? Because there must be – I bet if we combed through the MLB draft top 10 guys over the last 20 years, you'd find a number of guys who had the talent, who got in the wrong organization, got in the wrong situation, and it never worked out. So somewhere along the way, he didn't lose belief, or the Giants saved his belief or something. You know what I mean? Sort of that unquantifiable thing where he still believed somehow.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you gotta look at it too. I mean, he was with the Reds as well. He was with the Braves. I mean, this is his fourth team.
Yeah.
So obviously, people love stuff. I mean, as long as you stay healthy, and as long as you continue to have good stuff, which that never ended. I mean, that was always there. It was just more, you know, the mental part, finding like what works for this guy. I think. You know, and then he had some success with the Orioles. He pitched opening day for them in 2017.
Yeah.
So he's had success along the way. It's just been very inconsistent. So, and like he said when he came to the Giants, he's like, they just finally allowed me to be who I am. No one was telling me this is how I should be. This is how I should pitch. This is how he always felt he could be as a pitcher. But when you finally have an organization that believes that that's the type of pitcher you can be and that they instill that confidence in you, then you go out there and you start to believe in yourself. I think he started to figure it out a little bit, you know, when he started pitching out of the bullpen with the Reds. I mean, he struggled with the Reds orientation, and they put him in the bullpen, and he was able to go out there. And when you come out of the bullpen, the mentality is a little bit different. You just let it rip. You know, you're not holding anything back. You may only pitch an inning. So you're going high velocity, and you're throwing your best secondary pitch, and you're trying to strike guys out. And so when he went out there with that mentality, he started to realize, man, my stuff is pretty good. My fastball split combination can get it done in the big leagues. And then the Giants, when he came over to the Giants, he said, I want to start. And they're like, well, we want you to start. You know, we don't want you to come out of the bullpen. Your stuff's too good. You've proven in the past at times that you can get it done as a starter. And then, you know, he's just taken off with the Giants. But it's all the chicken and the egg thing. It's like, you know, do you need to have success before the confidence comes, or do you have to have confidence before you have success? And I think the Giants, by believing in him and telling him that this fastball splitter combination is going to allow you to have success at the big league level, then he's like, yeah, you're right. That's who I am. And I think he went out with confidence with the Giants from day one and belief in his ability. And it's just taken off from there. And I just feel like he's skimming the surface of how good he can be.
Man, great breakdown. And so you would anticipate this is going to continue. Like this is something Giants fans should look forward to. It's like win day when Gausman pitches, right?
Well, you'd like to think that. I mean, he's starting to establish himself as that guy. Yesterday, I'm telling you, yesterday was a big game for me, for him, just based on who he's facing, you know, in the Padres lineup, and then who he's going up against, and Blake Snell. And he even said it. He said, I know who I'm pitching against. I'm pitching against a former Cy Young Award winner, and you want to elevate your game. You want to out-pitch that guy. You love that mentality rather than, you know, a guy that, you know, is afraid of that kind of challenge. So I really do. I believe that it's kind of be win day. And the reason why I say that, too, is that, you know, we saw him go out opening night against the Mariners, and he didn't have the 95, 96, 97 we saw yesterday or that we saw last year. We saw 92, 93, max 95. He didn't have his fastball, his best fastball. But he knows that he can still pitch with 92, 93 because he knows he's got movement on his fastball. He knows he can command his fastball, and he knows he has above average secondary pitch in that split. And he's also got that third weapon in his slider if it comes down to it. So for me to see that he went out there and pitched as well as he did without his best stuff against Seattle, and then he turned it around and took it up a notch against the Padres, that just shows me that he's evolving into a true pitcher and a guy that believes in his stuff and believes in that he can beat anybody.
Great stuff.
It's a good feeling,
man,
to have as a pitcher.
Hey, just start. Just looking forward to his next start already. Hey, let's get into some of the micro of yesterday about Gabe Kapler. A couple of things. A, sending Gausman back out for the seventh, and then did you think he should have sent him out for the eighth?
No, I thought that was the right time. I think he had 96, 97 pitches. He had 90 against Seattle. You'd like his old school mentality, you know, run him out there till you like him to finish the game. I mean, that at least was my mentality, 20 years ago. You know, if I had 90 something pitches through seven and I finished the seventh inning like he did, where he punched out, I think it was Mateo on a nasty split. He showed his best split of the night. I'd be like, yeah, I know Dusty Baker would run him right back out there until something happened.
You know?
But it's just that's just the nature of the beast these days. You know, it's like they're really trying to protect arms. They're trying to keep guys healthy through, you know, make 33, 34 starts. You know, the 200 inning gauge barometer isn't there anymore. It's more like 180, 190 for the best guys. So the mentality changed. Would I like to see? Absolutely, I would have liked to have seen it. But I understand why it's not happening. And then, you know, Gabe obviously has enough confidence in the back end of his bullpen to believe that they can go out and get six outs. Unfortunately, you know, it didn't work out that way. But the Giants were able to win the game. In hindsight, you're thinking, well, why wouldn't you put him out for the eighth inning? He's your best guy. He's your best arm. But they're looking long term, you know. They're looking rest of the season, and they felt that was the best choice at that time. But you know, maybe next time now, because he's built up to 97 pitches, 100 pitches. Maybe he does get the ball in the eighth inning. I think it would make it a lot easier decision for Cap to make if the bullpen continues to give up big home runs late in the game, right? But you're going to go with your best arm. So we'll have to see how that plays out the rest of the year, but. Yesterday, I think it was the right move.
All right, yeah, interesting to see how that will evolve as the season goes on. Now, where are you with Tyler Rogers in the eighth inning? It is such a unique look. We talked about him a lot last year, but looks like he's the eighth inning guy. What do you think of that strategy?
Yeah, well, you know, that's a tough one because I believe that Tyler Rogers does present just a completely different look for hitters. And I think if you asked hitters, when they face him, he's not a comfortable at bat. He really isn't. And the home run that Myers hit yesterday, that's what he's trying to do. I mean, I tip my cap to Myers then because for him to get on top of that pitch, you got to understand that Rogers has got a unique slider. It's not like Tony Romo's. It's not like Sergio Romo's where he comes from a low three quarter and it slides across. He comes from down under, so it almost has the effect that it moves up. It takes off upward, right? It's physically impossible, but it definitely doesn't move down, right? It moves kind of up, and he has two different types of sliders that he can do. One that goes across and one that kind of like goes to the top of the zone and then explodes up. That's the one he threw to Myers. That's exactly what he wanted to throw. I mean, Myers somehow was able to get on top of that pitch. Now, I think we've seen a lot, way too much of Myers in the past few years. I mean, he seems to be like the Arenado and the Goldschmidt of the NL West. You know, one of those guys that just finds a way to get a big hit against the Giants. Seems like every series.
Right.
So, I mean, but I think he did a tremendous job of getting on top of that pitch. But, you know, if he doesn't hit that ball out, he gets him out there. Rogers has a 1-2-3 ninth, and we're really not even talking about it, right? But I think he's got a lot of options. I think Gabe's got plenty of options down there. He just feels right now that Rogers is the right guy. I think we know the right guy in the ninth inning. Yeah, we've seen McGee enough already this season to believe that he can handle the pressure of the ninth inning with one pitch, I might add. And that's pretty amazing in itself.
Yeah, good stuff. Now, Jake McGee in the ninth in a tie game on the road was interesting. Did you raise an eyebrow, mm-hmm. or what'd you think?
Yeah, it's not like the traditional way of doing things. It was a little unorthodox. I mean, typically on the road, you save your closer for the bottom half of the inning, because if you get a lead, then you want your closer to be out there. So I think what happens is that with the whole extra inning man on second rule, it kind of changes the mentality of managers nowadays, where – you know, you may think ahead to that. I'm not sure. I don't know if anybody asked Gabe that question and what his answer was. But, you know, when you have a guy in second base rather than bases clear, it could change a manager's opinion on who should be in the game. Now, McGee is a strikeout guy, but he also does have, you know, one pitch. The hitters know what's coming. You know, you're just trying to get a run in. I kind of don't know the mentality of looking into that. I know you want to have a strikeout guy on the mound with that extra inning rule. You don't want him to be able to advance the runner to third, or if they do advance the runner to third, you want to be able to have a guy that can strike the guy out. And we saw that happen with Peralta yesterday. You know, May had a nice strikeout with a runner on third and the bottom of the 10th. So I don't know. Maybe that's the mentality, or it's just I want the bottom of the ninth to be done, right? I want to just get to the extra. I don't want to roll the dice with any of my other relievers in the bottom of the ninth right now. And so he went with McGee, and obviously McGee, you know, did his job.
And then about Wandy Peralta, should Giants fans start to get to know that? I mean, he finished that thing off pretty dumb. I mean, that's a guy I talked about zero during the spring. What's your read?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people thought he might have been a bubble, like, you know, roster guy, you know, if he was even going to make the bullpen. He was really good at times last year. I mean, I remember when he was with the Reds, and stuff is great. You know, it's just the inconsistencies from outing to outing. Every once in a while, he gets a little wild with the fastball command, and he'll walk some guys, and that's not what you want when you bring a guy in the late innings. But the stuff is really good. I mean, the changeup slider combination that he features is swing and miss. I mean, he's got a really good changeup that moves down. It almost looks like a split from a left-hander, moves down and away from right-handers. And you look at, you know, now you have to face the three-batter minimum. You want lefties that can be able to have pitches to get righties out, and he does. You saw him strike out a righty yesterday with a good back foot slider. And then the fastball velocity is there. But I would say of all three of his pitches, you know, the most inconsistent of those is his fastball and that command. But when you have confidence enough in your secondary pitches, and they're as good as they are, you know, for Peralta, and if he feels more confident in throwing those, so be it. You know, I just felt he was here last year, and he was really good at times, but I think he was just one of those guys a little bit unreliable. You know, you just like, I don't know if I trust him, you know, late in games and tight games, because, you know, he can get a little wild at times. So I think that he's going to have to go out there and prove to Kapler that he can handle those late inning outs. And I think as outings like yesterday, you know, if he can continue to put those out there, then I think he'll gain a lot of confidence in Kapler, and you might see him later on in the game. Because his stuff is really good.
Yeah,
Garcia was that guy. Harleen was that guy. But, you know, we saw what happened opening night. I think, you know, outings like that will kick you down a level for a while.
If you're a former Red or a former Oriole, Farhan will get you, and he will improve you. That's basically the rule.
Right, right.
That's basically the rule.
You're on notice.
Hey, Sean, we saved the biggest fighting point for the end. We can't believe you endorsed the new second runner on second rule.
That's a shocker, man.
I can't either. I don't know if I was just – I don't know if, like, I had too much coffee yesterday.
You were all amped up. Yeah.
That's it. We understand. Yeah. We know what coffee can do to the brain. Yeah.
I've been there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was drinking coffee all game. I get out there. You know, I'm on set, and, you know, it's just – the Giants win the game. I mean, it was pretty it's exciting. It does. It actually is exciting. Now, I'm only saying that now because I'm not pitching, you know, in this era. But I don't know. I think it creates a lot of excitement. You know, I said yesterday on the post game show, it seems like especially nowadays with the strikeouts go, how good the bullpens are, it's home run or strikeout. You know, so. Extra innings now, if they didn't have this rule, would be just guys just going up there trying to leave the yard, you know. And when that happens, you know, then you're going to get 13, 14, 15 inning games, and nobody wants that. You know, I mean, yeah, they're exciting, but you lose people as they go, people watching the game. You know, you burn out pitchers. It can have some lasting effect on bullpens. So, I don't know. I kind of like it. I think it brings back a lot more strategy. It just seems so non-traditional. No, it doesn't seem like baseball, right? Like I'm doing my scorecard and I'm like, where do I put the runner? Like, yeah. where on my scorecard can I put the runner? Like, I put it at the top of the inning. You know, I'm making up my own little base path for a guy. It doesn't seem right. I mean, the pitchers don't have like it's not a run for the pitcher. I mean, that part of it is I don't really like, but I kind of like the excitement, the strategy of it, you know, the drama, you know, of having a guy at third base with less than two outs. Can the pitcher find a way to, you know, to strike him out? How are they going to manufacture a run here? I don't know. I think it brings back kind of the manufacturing a run whole philosophy that we haven't seen in a long time. I mean, because it's really just goes blood, you know. I kind of like the Giants are stealing the bases, though. You know, I mean, that's something
they,
new.
They
Nobody
are
steals
stealing.
Bases anymore.
You have Slater and Darren Ruff yesterday, too. So that was crazy.
Johnny Solano got a bag, too. So,
he
I mean,
did.
We're talking.
Yeah, the Giants. Yeah. My only argument against you there on that whole thing is, well, of course it creates excitement. There's two arguments against that. A, extra innings by themselves are exciting already. Because, you know, we're already in extra innings, right? So that's number one.
Yep.
And number two would be that if everybody's so excited about the return of traditional baseball, how about playing that innings 1 through 9, Sean? How's that?
You know.
what do you mean innings 1 through 9?
Well, like, so you're saying, like, Ruff and you and Greg were saying, oh, this is great. This runner on second creates old baseball strategy. And I was like, yeah you guys can do that. Earlier in the game, too, right?
Yeah, the rest of the game? No, I'd be fine with that. I absolutely would be fine with that. No, I don't disagree with you one bit on that.
Yeah. So
yeah, no, you're right. Extra innings is fun. But you got to understand that, like, the game's not over just because you put a runner at second. I mean, you can still play 13 innings with that format. I mean, it's happened before. I think it eliminates those, you know, those really long extra
Which
inning
I think,
games.
Though, but the math showed that those were very rare, though. Very rare.
Very
but anyway,
rare.
Listen,
they're,
it's going to be happy when you win. You're going to be a little PO'd when you get burned by it.
Today
you
know? We like it. Right.
We hated it on opening night, didn't we?
Right.
Yeah, it was like the worst rule ever.
Yeah, so anyway, fun stuff, man. Hey, always enjoy the chat. It's always a great conversation on baseball. Look forward to it every Thursday. Enjoy your day off. Are you on during the homestand, too, this weekend? Or
no, I'm back in Arizona. I got back last night, so yeah, I'm here for – here for a couple weeks.
All right. We'll look forward to your next.
I'll be watching it from the couch.
Yeah. Well, we'll look forward to your next hit and we'll look forward to our next conversation. So be good, Sean. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, bro.
All right, guys. Yeah, you too.
There he is, Sean Estes, Paulie.
Cool dude, man. Like having him on.
Strong radio, my friend.
Yep, radio.
Yep. Yeah. Listen, we were all very polite about it, but, you know, the hell with the rule.
He
know
blamed
what I mean?
It on the coffee, which was interesting. I got to try that. It wasn't so much me as it was the caffeine.
You know what I say to the rule? And if you don't listen, rule,
Then to hell with you.
Yeah, right.
No, there's nothing else to say.
See if
after
you
that.
Can find that in the system, Coast. That old.
To hell with you.
Do you remember what that was?
Well, it's definitely Arnold. I'm not sure the. I don't remember the film.
While Coast is looking for it, you are listening to the KMBR Morning Show on KMBR and KMBR FM.
To hell with you,
San Francisco. The Sports Center. I think it was Conan the. I think it was Conan the Barbarian.
It doesn't matter. Anything Arnold says is gold to my ear.
Gold for sure, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Great start to the Power Hour. Sunny Thursday. Let's take a quick powder and the Power Hour rolls on with your top six and your cooler of content. Kurt Warner, Hall of Famer, talking 49er quarterbacks at 8:30. All coming up on KMBR 104.5 and 680, the sports leader.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.